Michael Perry, our guest, coming up next here on the Ideas Network. In fact, he's with me by phone right now as we speak, and he is, I think, ready to launch a long trip as he travels around a bit around the country to talk about his latest book. It's called Coop, A Year of Poultry, Pigs, and Parenting. He's an author, musician, nurse, been an emergency first responder from near Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Michael, or Mikey as he's sometimes known, has authored another wonderful book. It's published by HarperCollins. And his previous works, Truck, I love that, and Population 485, Meeting Your Neighbors, One Siren at a Time. He has an essay collection called Off Main Street. So I'm pleased to welcome him back to the phones and certainly to take your questions or comments as we visit with Michael Perry. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, and we'd love to hear from you. So give us a call or send us an email. Michael, welcome back.
Larry, it's great to be with you.
Thanks yeah.
for having me.
Well, I tell you what, it's a pleasure always to have a chance to talk with you. And yours, Jennifer Cheverini was just kind of finishing up her book tour, and you're about ready to start on yours, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they're going to send me around the country some. I'm going to start here on Friday up in Rice Lake, and then I'll have an event on Saturday in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. And then after that, several more clear into the middle of June, actually.
But that's going to take you away from home and family.
Yes, ironically enough, I'll be running all over the country telling everybody about raising pigs and chickens, while, as my wife sometimes remarks, she's back home feeding the pigs and chickens.
You know, you write about that a little bit in your book this time around. The kind of, in a way, bad feeling, sorry feeling about having to leave home to go out and kind of provide for the family in a way.
Well, I'm a very fortunate guy. I'm grateful for every bit of it, and I do put together a living by writing and performing and speaking. And I am on the road a lot, but I'll tell you what, we've got relatives, neighbors, and friends who are in the trucking business. They're on the road every week. We also have many relatives, neighbors, and friends who are in the military, and they're doing their second, third, sometimes fourth tour. And so for me to have to run around the country and talk about books is a real privilege. Having said that, sure, anyone who grew up on a farm knows that you can't be away from home as much as I am and really call yourself a true farmer. But we manage. We had freezers full of meat and got eggs in the refrigerator and some preserves. And so I think one of the things that's interesting is a lot of folks are finding a way to integrate a little mm-hmm. bit of this farming into their life, and I kind of write about that in the book, that it's not about becoming a full-blown farmer. Goodness knows, I grew up on a farm, and I watched how my dad worked and milked cows twice a day, and I know I'm not that guy. But, you know, in the old days, folks would have a pig out back, and maybe they worked at the blacksmith shop or they did something else, but they also had a pig and a chicken, and that's kind of what we're shooting for.
And you tell the story, and it's about a year, right?
Yeah, it starts in about January, and I wrap things up long about October, which is when you find out if you know, it's that time of year that you harvest and butcher, and you find out if you had any success or not.
Well, I love the front cover. Now, is that the coop that you built?
It is the coop in question. Yeah, I got my buddy Mills helped me build that coop, and that's part of the saga too, because I loved talking about my chicken coop and dreaming about my chicken coop. Actually building it was a bit of an issue, and as a matter of fact, I said it. I wouldn't blame my wife if she went around asking me the rhetorical question, which came first, the chicken or the coop? Because by the time I got that coop built, our little fuzzy chicks were about ready to start popping eggs out. So, but yeah, that's the coop on the place.
Oh, I love it. Now, I'm starting to remember. That came from, you were doing a little online searching, and that's an old...
Yeah, I love the look of the old farm buildings, you know, and I had in mind the kind of coop I wanted, and I wanted one that looked like it had been there a while, and I was noodling around online, as you know, all your farmers do. And I came across, I think it was at North Dakota State University. I could be not quite right on that, but I know it was North Dakota. And they have an archive, an online archive, of chicken coop and barn or farm building plans that date clear back to, the, I believe, the 20s, certainly the 30s, and right up through the 60s. And so I printed out a couple of those, and we kind of worked from that. I will tell you that by the time we were done, there'd been some modifications. And you got to kind of squint to make the thing look straight, but I don't know, it holds chicken.
It holds chicken. You know, I've got a friend kind of like Mills, a guy who is helpful. He knows how to get things done, and he's nice about it. You know, he doesn't make you feel like you don't know anything, but he's helpful, and he's always got he always has the right tools, and he's usually got things laying around that that you need.
Yeah, I said Mills. What I love about you, everything you just said is true about my friend Mills. He's just a good man, and he's kind to us. I was just on the road for a week, and my wife was given some lilac bushes, and she was able to dig them up, but she wasn't able to get them in, and Mills came over and helped. He's just that kind of friend. But, yeah, he's got, you mentioned the supplies. I write in the book that Mills, out back of his place there, he's got what he calls his Sanford and Son pile. And you'll ask if he's got something. Boy, his eyes will light up, and off he'll go. And I said, one time we needed some treated posts, and he said, oh, follow me. And he went out back behind some pine trees there, and he had old tarp, and he pulled that tarp back like he was, I don't quite know how to pronounce this, but a sommelier, you know, about to reveal his finest Chateau Lafite. And there they were, just exactly what you needed. Yeah, he's a handy guy.
Oh, man. Well, you write about him a little bit, but you write a lot about your family this time around, your mom and dad, and growing up with them.
Yeah, I have some self-doubt and reservation about that. My parents are very private people. They live a quiet life. They always have. They aren't looking to impress anybody, at least certainly not on this earth. And I try to be respectful of that, but they also gave me this rich childhood from which I often draw when I'm writing. So, yeah, there's info about them and stories. You know, I write about moving to the farm when I was 2 years old. My dad actually, my mom said early on, ever since she was a child all the way up until she was a young woman, she said she didn't care who she married as long as she didn't marry a farmer. So she and my dad were both from the city, Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and she married him. He had a degree in chemistry, and they moved to Nakusa, Wisconsin, and my dad actually worked in the paper mills in Port Edwards for the first 2 years of my life. But 2 years into the marriage, he decided he wanted to be a farmer. Bad news for mom. And so they moved to north of New Auburn, Wisconsin, there, and bought a farm from an old Norwegian couple, and that's where I grew up then. And yeah, I write about growing up there, and they took in a lot of foster children. And dad wasn't a natural farmer. I have a scene in the book where I say I remember very vividly the night that I began to think of my father as a farmer, and that was the night that he came home towing a giant lactating Holstein on a rope tied to the bumper of his Ford Falcon station wagon. So it's not the kind of scene you'd see on the cover of Horde's Dairy.
No, but you know, I hope they like this book, because I went away from the book with a real admiration for your mother and your dad.
The simplest way to put it is I just will never, ever live up to them. And in my books, and it's the same in Coop, I always, acknowledgments part, I just put what I mean, and that is, when it comes to me, anything good is because of them, and everything else is simply not their fault. They're just quiet folks, and like I said, they certainly didn't ask for this, and it's a little uncomfortable for them sometimes, but I don't know, they gave me so much, and it's part of who I am, it's part of what I write about.
Well, I'll tell you what, every one of our phone lines is filled here, and I want to give folks a chance to ask you some questions. I've got lots of questions, too, but let's go to Jim in Waukesha. Jim, hello.
Hello, Michael. It's nice to hear you. Nice to hear your voice again, because I listened to Population 485 on tape, and I really want to ask you to do the narration of your other two books. There's something special about a guy who writes a book as good as yours and then knows exactly what kind of intonation to give every word and sentence.
I thank you for that. That's nice of you to say. What's happened with the books there is that Population 485, yeah, we did record that. It's an abridged version. It contains some of the essays from Off Main Street. And the CD of that actually went out of print, although it's still available as a download on iTunes and I think Audible.com, a few places like that. But then I'm kind of a little bit too small potatoes for Harper Audio, and so what we did for this for Coop, and now we just now got the rights back for Truck. I've got the audio rights back for both of those books, and sometime in the next year, it's our hope to sit down, and we're just going to do it on our own, old style DIY, and sit down and read those books into a microphone, and then try to make them available. So I sure appreciate you saying that.
And you wrote back to me after I finished Truck at 4 a.m. It took you 6 months to write back, but it was lovely of you to respond to my email.
Oh, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, too, because I can get a lot of guilt off my chest. You know, I kept up with emails all the way up until kind of the middle of last year, and then I have officially lost the battle. I read every single email I receive, and I put a red flag on it, and as you can attest, sometimes when I'm in the airport or if I've got a minute, I sit down and go all the way back there and I start pecking away at them. But I do read every single email I get and I try to answer as many as I can. And I appreciate when folks share. But if you don't hear from me, it's not because we're not speaking. I'm just kind of over busy with chickens, pigs, and babies.
Oh, babies, that's another part we want to talk about. But Nancy in Sherwood has a question or comment. Nancy, hi.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Actually, I got to see Michael at the Fox Cities, and I had a contraband copy of Coop, so I've read it.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't do anything this weekend but read. And maybe because I grew up on a farm, I can really relate to it. But you don't have to be a farm girl to like this book. You're going to cry and laugh. And as always, it's beautifully written, and you'll need your dictionary. and I think I was actually going to ask the same question that the first caller came in on, so I'm trying to figure out what I should ask.
Well, I can tell you about the big words if you want,
because
that does come up quite a bit, and I'm a little self-conscious there. I hope folks don't think I'm trying to show off, because that's a tin horn trick. But I do love words, and I love poetry, and I love how poets approach words. Many people have heard me say before, I like what Dylan Thomas said about choosing words for their taste over their meaning. But my favorite story about the words comes, I think I wrote about it in Truck, and that there's a wonderful neighbor lady named Ramona where I grew up, and she's known me since I was a tot. She changed my diapers and bandaged my cuts, so she's not too impressed with me, which is as it should be. And one day someone who had read one of my books but didn't realize that Ramona knew me said something about how she said that Michael Perry, he writes very beautifully and he uses some pretty amazing words. And Ramona looked right in the eye and said, yeah, well, that ain't the way he talks.
Michael Perry, our guest today, here on the Ideas Network. So happy to have you listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, author Michael Perry. His latest book is called Coop, A Year of Poultry, Pigs, and Parenting, and it's the story of Mike and his wife Annalise and his daughter Amy, who take up residence in the kind of a rickety Wisconsin farmhouse, I think you might say. He might agree with that. On, 30 or 40 acres of overgrown farmland, and he gets some chickens and a pig, some pigs, and a baby comes there his way as well. And it's this, that story, and it's wonderfully told, and we're really pleased to have him with us today as he talks about his latest book. Just out, it's published by HarperCollins. And so many people, Michael, are waiting online. I'm just going to go to the phones here and go to Shireen in Springbrook, who's has a comment. Hi, Shireen.
Good morning. I went to see Michael Perry on stage in Hayward, and he puts on a marvelous show. If anyone has a chance to go and see him, please do. And I've read his books, and he has a wonderfully, wonderful way of wording things. I love it. And I keep dragging people to his show, so I hope he keeps having them.
Well, thank you. I sure appreciate that. And we do have wonderful turnout for our events, and we have a pretty good time, I think. And as far as me having a way of wording things. I appreciate you saying that, too. But I would tell you that it's, boy, it takes me a lot of revision and about 47 drafts. I can tell you that on the first draft, right out of my mouth, I can put my foot in there like anybody else. But I sure thank you for that.
And I loved, I think right in your foreword, you had a little comment about words and how you, or maybe it was a prologue, I can't remember now. It was kind of amusing because something like that has happened to me.
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about. In the intro to the prologue, I basically said, I'm afraid I've hit that point where I'm just repeating myself constantly. And the example I gave was while I was working on Coop, I had this little insight that I thought was precious, and so I jotted it down, and then I polished it, and I rewrote it, and I worked on it for quite a long time, and I put it together until I thought it was a little aphoristic gem, and was working it into the text, and then while I was looking back at something else, I found another essay I'd written 7 years ago, and it had pretty much the same phrase, word for word. So, yeah, I don't trust myself anymore.
Shireen, thank you. Mary and Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Mary.
Oh, boy, what fun. Oh, no, we've got an echo. Is that on my end?
No, we're okay now.
If it was good 7 years ago, it's still good now. I have to tell Michael Perry that friends of ours were at the hospital for the delivery of their first baby, and as often happens, it was a really tight fit. And as the doctor was wrestling and trying to figure out what to do, the new father said, "Doc, I can handle this." And the doctor gave him a stunned look and said, "Oh, that won't do." And he just looked at him and said, "Hell, I've been pulling cabs all my life," he said. "This ain't no different." And out came the baby. But I first saw Michael Perry at the Cross Plains Library. And we are still laughing about your wonderful story about your brother. I believe he drove that dump truck and fell in love quite secretly. And your mother delivered the announcement. And you just stood back and said, "How can this be?" And I hope that you would give us an update if there is one on your brother. And I also wanted to ask, apparently you've been able to make the rare transition from self-publishing to one of the few remaining big publishers, HarperCollins. And I had thought when we first heard you speak that you were still self-publishing. It's such an accomplishment, especially when you don't have a genre book, to get to that place. And I thought perhaps you'd share a little bit about that journey, how long it took, and why did it take them so long? People love your writing. I'll look forward to this book, too.
Well, thank you. Quickly about my brother, he's doing fine. The brother in question, we just had a family get-together Sunday night. It's kind of my last chance to see everybody for a while before I head out on the road, and I always tell my family, I feel like whenever a book comes out, I just need to issue a blanket apology. he shows up a little bit in the next book, but particularly his wife shows up because there's a story involving a guinea pig, and my brother's wife is a critical central player in the saga of the guinea pig. But as far as the self-publishing, you know, I got very fortunate. I started out writing. I went to the library and looked at a book called The Writer's Market. There's a little section in the front there that had instructions on how to pitch your pieces and how to approach freelancing, and I approached it pretty fundamentally based on that information. And then fast forward, I really was fortunate in that I had self-published. Whenever I published a magazine article, an essay, I would keep the rights to it, and I self-published little collections on my own and learned about setting up book tours and speaking events. And what happened to me is that somewhere along the line, an agent in New York City read one of my pieces and actually tracked me down, and that's what led to... And the funny thing is, when she called me out of the blue one day, I was in New Auburn at my desk, she said she had read this piece, and she wondered if I had anything else, and I said, "Well, sure, I have other stuff." And then she said, "Are you working on a book?" And I actually said no, because I wasn't. I was so busy just doing magazine pieces, trying to pay the rent, and so then she suggested that I start thinking about books, and that's how that happened. So I always, you know, people ask, what's the secret? Boy, I don't know. Mine was just a combination. I did say in Population 485, the way to get discovered, I learned how to make a living as a freelance writer from cleaning my dad's calf pens, which is you just keep shoveling until you got a pile so big someone has to notice. And all joking aside, that's kind of what happened, just a real break.
Mary, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Appreciate your call. Tim in Eau Claire wants to know who are a few of your favorite children's authors that you read to your kids.
That qu- question always scares me because I know a few and I'm going to forget to name them and then I'm going to have an uncomfortable situation the next time I meet them. But one of the two things come to mind. One thing that's really neat, yes, I spend a lot of time away from my family, but boy, one of the great blessings of what I do is that I go to a lot of book events and a lot of folks, booksellers or the authors themselves, know that I've got little ones at home, and they often send children's books home with me. And so I get to come home and open my suitcase and give books to my girls, and they both love them. One local writer who wrote a really terrific book called is Katie McKee, and it's a book called Pumpkin Town, and we really enjoy that one. Also, what's also been real fun for me is that I've gotten to relive favorite books of my childhood through my children. I think one of the ones is, of course, I'm now on my second daughter where we're reading Goodnight Moon.
Oh, yeah.
Which is just a
love that
eminent
book.
Classic. Yeah, the simplicity and the comfort of that book. Mm-hmm. And my older daughter is happily churning through all the Laura Ingalls Wilder books. And again, just to hear those names again, Lonzo, and it just brings so much of my own childhood back. So that's been a real privilege.
Oh, well, Robert in West Allis has a question for you. So let's go to Robert. Hi, Robert.
Hi. We met up at the New Auburn reunion, and you gave me a copy of a book. I was lucky to win the drawing that day.
Well, I love you know you're at a good Wisconsin get-together when there's door prize.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we took a picture of the family, but I wanted to tell you that down the street where you were living down there at the old telephone office at corner of First and Main, we raised chickens every year. We'd get them at Easter time because I had two young twin brothers, and they would always... that was really a big surprise for them when the chickens came. We'd get 100 of them. Raise them in our backyard. One year we got some leghorns, and the thing was that they would be flying all around our backyards, and I didn't know enough to clip their wings. But another time we had some white jersey giants, and one of them we got roosters. We ordered hens normally, but roosters would come once in a while, and they would chase our gas station attendant around because they were big and ugly things. So we had a lot of fun with those chickens.
Yeah, it's like a lot of things, this whole chicken renaissance, if you will. It is just that. It happened before. People used to have chickens around. We have had some mixed luck with roosters. We, too, have had a couple of surprise roosters. We ordered hens and wasn't too long, and it became evident that there was something improper in their behavior and comportment. We like the roosters. They can be a little aggressive. We had a Dominecker, a Dominique, actually, they're called, but I like to call them Domineckers because that's what they're called in those old Billy Joe Shaver songs. And we had a Dominecker rooster, and that really made me happy, except he just finally got to be so aggressive with the kids that we had to invite him for dinner one afternoon.
Well, you've got some chickens in your book that have a little personality.
Yeah, we have one that really kind of found her way into our hearts. She was she had some sort of neurological disorder, and she trembled and shook and almost had little spasms, but she was such a delightful little chicken because she never gave up. And she always would go charging off across the yard after the other chickens, and she'd veer off to the left, and then her leg would contract, and she'd shoot up into the air, but she would always try real hard. We called her Little Miss Shake and Bake, and she was a great little chicken. Sadly, not to give away too much, but she ran into a German Shepherd.
Yeah,
things didn't pan out so well.
but it's fun to read about the experiences. Carrie and Wausau will give you a chance. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. You hear me?
Yes.
Okay. When I was maybe 10 or, well, I don't know. See, we had like a hobby farm, but it wasn't really. I mean, we just had, there was a chicken coop in the behind the garage, and there were mangers in there. And we had no chickens, but the previous owners, and there was like maybe two previous owners, but that turned into a feral cat.
Oh, barn?
Yeah. So we had an abundance of kittens, you know, and it was just always kind of fun because we could catch a kitten once in a while, and they were friendly. And
oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, Michael writes about cats in the latest book here. I think it's when you're reminiscing about milking, and that brought back some memories because I grew up on a farm too, and I remember the barn cats. And
I think I wrote about going out to milk the cows on winter nights. How nice it was that they were cozy. It was much better than in the summer when they were all hot and they had swabbed their tail through the gutter and they'd smack you upside the head with a full tail. But in the winter, sometimes we'd go out and we'd actually lie on top of the cows, and they were real docile, and it was so warm to lie on top of them in the winter. But I said the cats did it backwards. They'd wait till the cow stood up, and then they'd go in and they'd lay down on the warm straw where the cow had been laying. And the old barn cats, well, that's why they were old. They knew when to get out of the way. But some of those little young kitties, occasionally you'd come out and find what we called pancake kitties, and they had failed to move. When a cow decides to lie down, they don't really do it in segments. They just sort of pull the ripcord.
and down they go.
Yeah.
And I remember from my own days, taking the strainer from the milk.
Oh, yeah.
And you talked about that as well, and throwing that out for the cats to, and the cats kind of knew when that was going to happen.
Isn't that funny? Yeah, the strainer in those old milk filters, there would be a little round pad, and by the end of milk, and it would collect foam and on top of it. And you're exactly right, and I had forgotten about that part where they didn't care, and then you got down to about the third or second cow from the end, and all of a sudden those cats start gathering around the milk house. They knew exactly what was up. Yeah.
Absolutely. Gary, thanks. Pam in New Auburn, your turn. Hi, Pam.
Hi there. Hi, Mike. I just wanted to say hi and thank you for putting New Auburn on the map with population 485.
Oh,
I love all your books.
Well, you're very kind, and I always tell people, you know, we've made this move down to the farm. It's actually near Fall Creek, Wisconsin, and it was a family deal. My wife's mom owned this farm, and she moved, and she wanted to keep it in the family, and my wife and I were both looking to get on a farm, and so it made sense, but it wasn't easy moving from New Auburn, although I'm happy to say I still make it back for the firefighter banquet and jamboree days and a few days in between. But I always tell people, you know, we've been welcomed down here, and we have some wonderful neighbors, and the lady down at the post office in Fall Creek has been real kind. But I always tell folks, I'm grateful to say that wherever I am standing when I say it, I am from and of New Auburn.
That's great.
That place has given me everything.
You and thank you very much, Pam, for calling. You tell a nice story about that in your book when you had some concerns about moving Amy around and hometowns and stuff. I thought was kind of nice.
Yes, I don't know if I can summon the exact quote, but I know when I met her, she was three, and her mom, she was living in a house in Eau Claire, Wisconsin with her mom, and then we got married, and Amy moved to New Auburn, and then about 2 years after that, we made this move to the farm, and I said I felt kind of guilty sometimes, because I was a kid who, all I ever remember is one place. I was two, and we moved to the farm, and lived there all through my growing up, and so I sometimes felt a little guilty, but one night we were in between. We were moving to Fall Creek, but we had stopped back at our house in New Auburn to pick up some stuff. And when Amy walked on the porch, she said, "Well, this is New Auburn. This is one of my hometowns." And she made it plural, and that made me feel better.
Yeah, that was a nice touch. Joe in Madison, your turn. Hi, Joe.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm glad I was able to get on, Mike. I just wanted to let you know how much your book, Population 45, meant to me. I had... I think I'd heard excerpts of it on Chapter of Day just prior to my leaving to go on a sabbatical to Australia. And in anticipation of moving, I was also a volunteer firefighter at the time and had to leave that. And if you can appreciate it, that thing sort of gets in your blood. So
yes, sir.
I was really missing the, you know, the action, the pager going off in the middle of the night, that sort of thing. And I received your book just literally the day as I was getting on the plane, so I saved it till I got to Australia and started reading it. And it really brought back a lot of the memories of living in Wisconsin, as well as being on the fire department. And it really helped me make that transition. So I just wanted to say thanks for that book. It meant a lot to me at the time.
Thanks.
And I also just wanted to relay a real quick funny little story. When I was on the fire department, I had this uncanny ability for showing up to the scene of car accidents just as they were happening or as we were getting paged out. And it was almost to the point where the department started getting a little suspicious that I was showing up on scene all the time. And while I was in Australia there probably a month or two, I was driving down the Bruce Highway between Brisbane and the Sunshine Coast, lo and behold, first on scene to a very serious car accident. And because it was in a fairly desolate area, I had to do a lot of the extraction myself and so forth. And anyway, I just thought, what would the fire department have thought of me now? Here I am in Australia, first on scene again. And it was just after I finished reading your book. So it's just sort of poignant and funny at the same time.
Well, thank you. Two things. First, I would just request that you just keep me updated about where your location is currently so I can stay away. Yeah, thanks for saying that. You know, I don't assign any higher purpose to what I do. I've often said writing may be a calling, but it's not a higher calling. Everybody's got a job to do, and I'm primarily, I never make any bones about it. I'm trying to feed my family, and so I don't set out with any higher purpose, but it really is heartwarming when you hear someone tell a story like that, and I sure appreciate it. And I can tell you, I get back tenfold or hundredfold when I put into those books.
Yeah. Thank you, Joe. Thank you very much for calling. And Earl in Milwaukee, we will turn to you next. Hi, Earl.
Hi. Mike, this is Earl Cameroon.
There's a blast from the past. Although Earl is a very young man.
Not so young anymore, and I don't ride ambulance anymore either. But
yes,
but I remember a few nights with you.
Sure, we rode the same rig way back when. I used to volunteer in Chautauqua, Wisconsin, on the ambulance up there. And I'll tell you, EMS and fire, to a little shorter extent, have been a part of my life since 1988, and that's the one consistent thing through everything else. And I'm grateful for that. You know. When I moved down here to Fall Creek, I've been allowed to join the local emergency rescue service that's affiliated with the township fire department down here.
Well, that's great. And when I moved to Milwaukee, I did some, it got a little bit too fast down here.
Yeah, and I tell you, I'm on the road so much now. My call volume is way down, but I am grateful that they let me be part of it, and I do carry a pager when I'm home, and. If the timing's right, I will show up at your house at 2 o'clock. But that's a way I know that someday my family's going to need some help, or my little girls, and so I appreciate people out there doing it, and it's a privilege to carry that with me.
I imagine you've gotten a lot of mail over time from EMS folks and volunteer fire department folks.
Yeah, you bet. And there's what's fun about that is I love to talk about books and writing and art, but I also love there's a whole little subtext to all those conversations, and I speak a few times a year. I speak at EMS or firefighter conferences, and it's always fun because there's about four or five lines and jokes that you can use at those conferences where you get a reaction that you wouldn't other places, and that's fun. You know, you got a little secret code, little language, extra terminology that you can sneak in there.
Well, you are embarking now on a pretty big tour. You mentioned, though, at the start of the program that you have some stops here in Wisconsin, and I want you to go over those again with us.
Well, I don't know if I can hit them all. I will try. I can tell you that if the best, the most complete schedule, like everybody else, I've got a website. It's www.sneezingcow.com. And if you go there, we've got all the dates listed and all the times and cities. But on April 24th, this Friday, I'll be in Rice Lake, Wisconsin, signing books at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and then do a reading and a performance with my band that night at about 7. And then on Saturday, April 25th, I'll be at Borders Books in Eau Claire at 2 o'clock. And then I go to Viroqua on April 28th, and I'm in La Crosse on April 29th, but that's a private event. And then heading up to Duluth May 1st, and from there on, it just kind of blows wide open. They are really sending me around, and I'm looking forward to it. But I'm going to be missing the chickens and my babies by the time it's all over.
I imagine. So, and another book in the works already?
Yes, sir. I meant that part about feeding my kids. that's magazine articles and books and speaking is how I make a living. And so, yes, I'm being a little bit low-key about it because I've been offered a contract for the next book and everything's been agreed upon, but there's been no actual ink on the signature line yet. So in this day and age, a guy kind of stays cautious. But, yeah, my next book is mainly going to be about hanging around with old-timers. Mm-hmm. And talking, I got a guy down the road from me here who builds his own cannons, among other things. Thought it might be useful to try and pick up a tip or two from him.
Mike, thank you. Thank you so much, Mike.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Michael Perry, get his latest book. Well, if you haven't, read all of his books. They're wonderful. The latest is Coop. And A Year of Poultry, Pigs, and Parenting. It's published by HarperCollins, our own Wisconsin writer, and he's a pleasure to read. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.